listeners. In Volume 1, you would have enjoyed the captivating story of how the bitter rivalry between the cousins, the Pandavas and the Kauravas, started. It was a family feud which had vast national repercussions. Even today, a bitter quarrel is hailed as a Kurukshetra war. In this second volume, we can trace the circumstances, direct and indirect, that led to the epic battle. We also see how relentless fate is. Even the good and the just have to go through severe trials and tribulations, that it sometimes makes us wonder if there is justice at all in the world. Vyasa, the great master of characterization, presents us a variety of personalities, each heroic in his or her own way, responding in different manners to the changing circumstances. The Mahabharata is not only an ethical scripture, but also a gripping narrative that gives us deep insights into the mystery called human nature. Maya offers service. After the Khandava forest episode, one day, Krishna, Arjuna, and Maya were sitting relaxed. Maya bowed to them and said, "You have saved my life and I want to do you some favor in return. I am an architect by profession. Command me to do anything you like." Arjuna smiled and said, "I do not help people expecting anything in return. If, however, you insist, do whatever Krishna wants, and that will please me." Maya looked expectantly at Krishna. Krishna thought for a while and said, "Yudhishthira is dear to me. I shall be pleased if you can build a palace for him. The assembly hall or sabha in the palace must be something special. It must be so wonderful that none will be able to copy it even after the closest inspection." Maya was exceedingly happy to undertake such a challenging job. He discussed the plan of the sabha with Yudhishthira and others. With the permission of the Pandavas, Maya left for the Kailasa mountains, where he had buried in a sacred lake called Bindusara some precious gems. After reaching that lake, Maya collected all the gems he had stored there. He had also kept a conch and a mace. He came back to the Pandavas and presented the conch called Devadatta to Arjuna and the mace to Bhima. He then set about the task of constructing the palace. Soon, he built a unique palace which had an assembly hall built around a pool of water, with marble flooring studded with precious gems. On one side of the pool was a transparent floor made of crystal stone on level with the surface of water in the pool. As a result, this dry floor also gave the appearance of water. After the completion of the construction, which took 13 months, Maya invited Yudhishthira and others and showed them around. The new palace rivaled even the abode of the gods. The Pandavas were pleased to see the wonderful palace and thanked Maya. On an auspicious day, the Pandavas entered the hall. To celebrate the occasion, Yudhishthira fed thousands of poor people and lavished gifts on them. Various kings and ascetics who had been invited from many countries were present on the occasion, adding to its grandeur. Narada advises Yudhishthira to perform Rajasuya. Amongst the guests was Narada, the divine sage of great devotion and wisdom. He was welcomed with great reverence by Yudhishthira and others. Narada, greeting his hosts, said, "Yudhishthira, I have seen several assembly halls in other worlds. Let me assure you, yours is the best on the face of this earth." He then inquired of Yudhishthira about the welfare of his people. Yudhishthira reciprocated Narada's greetings and questioned him in great humility. "Sage Narada, tell me how Vedic study, wealth, wife, and knowledge of the Shastras become fruitful?" Narada replied, "The Vedas bear fruit when the person who has studied them performs Agnihotra and other sacrifices. Wealth bears fruit when the man shares it with others. A wife, when she becomes a mother, and knowledge of the scriptures when it leads to humility and a virtuous character." Yudhishthira then requested him to describe the several assembly halls he had seen in other worlds. Narada described in detail to Yudhishthira the different halls of Yama, Varuna, Kubera, Indra, etc. He told him first about the Sabha of Indra, in which King Harishchandra of the solar race shared the throne with Indra. He also narrated that many kings of the earth, including Shantanu and Pandu, were living in heaven. Yudhishthira became curious and asked Narada, "Sir, you have said that all my ancestors are living in heaven, whereas Harishchandra alone is sharing the throne of Indra? What good deeds did he perform that the others did not?" Narada said, "King Harishchandra attained that region of Indra by performing the Rajasuya sacrifice." Yudhishthira, "You are so powerful that you can conquer the entire world. Your brothers are invincible warriors. I would like you to fulfill the wish which your father disclosed to me. I have just come to inform you of it. Let me know, revered sir, what the wish of my dear father was I am eager to fulfill it, said Yudhishthira. Narada said, you must perform the Rajasuya sacrifice to establish your superiority over all other kings. The twin desires of fulfilling his father's wish and of establishing his superiority over all other kings kindled in Yudhishthira's heart a strong desire for performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. He discussed the matter with his brothers and many elders. Everyone endorsed his view and was enthusiastic about the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice. Encouraged by his brothers and other ministers, he resolved to perform it. He sent a message to Lord Krishna to seek his blessings. Krishna was their supreme guide and friend. He had to be consulted before anything could be finally decided. Krishna counsels Yudhishthira. Krishna came to Indraprastha. He was received by Yudhishthira and others with due respect. The very presence of Krishna brought great joy to the Pandavas. Yudhishthira worshipped him with loving devotion. After Krishna was comfortably seated, Yudhishthira said, O Lord, I have a desire to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. My friends and advisors have encouraged me to proceed with the arrangements. But friends do not always realize the problems involved, and advisors often indulge in flattery. Because you are above these two, O Krishna, I seek your guidance and counsel. Lord Krishna thought for a while and said, you possess all the qualities essential for the performance of the Rajasuya sacrifice. But there will be only one obstacle, and that is King Jarasandha, the ruler of Magadha. He has subdued many kings and is holding them in subjection. The Kshatriya rulers are afraid of his power and fear him greatly. To escape from his wrath, we too had to flee from Mathura to Dwaraka and build a new city. You are right, said Yudhishthira. I wonder whether Jarasandha can be killed either by you or by Bhishma or Arjuna. Otherwise, it is better that I abandon the idea of performing the Rajasuya sacrifice. Bhima disliked this attitude of Yudhishthira. He said, ambition is an essential virtue of a king. What is the good of being strong if one does not know of one's own strength? What indeed is there that cannot be accomplished by a combination of my physical strength, Krishna's wisdom, and Arjuna's skill in archery? Krishna also said, Jarasandha has become a terror to kings. He has captured 86 kings. When he captures 100, he will begin sacrificing them before Lord Shiva. Whoever prevents this will surely acquire fame and become the emperor of this world. Yudhishthira said, I am not convinced that we can do this. Why take risks? Bhima and Arjuna are my two eyes and you are my conscience. How will I live if anything happens to any of you? Krishna replied, Who knows when death comes? A Kshatriya who dies on the battlefield is ever considered to be blessed. Why should we not join together and wage a war against him? Killing of Jarasandha. Yudhishthira wanted to know more about Jarasandha. Krishna narrated his story. He said, There was a king of Magadha country by name Brihadratha. He married the twin daughters of the king of Kashi and vowed to them that he would have equal love for both of them and that he would never be partial. He was a great king and his fame spread all over the world. But his only worry was that he had no children. He performed many sacrifices in order to please the gods and beget children. One day he heard that sage Chandakaushika had come to his city. The king with his wives approached the sage and served him devotedly. The sage, pleased with his devotion, offered him a boon. The king begged for a son. The sage gave him a mango fruit sanctified with mantras. The king gave that mango fruit to his wives. They ate the mango, dividing it into two equal halves, both of them to the great joy of the king. Were about to give birth, as they and the king thought, to two children. But to their great shock and grief, they each gave birth to one half body of a child. Each of these two bodies had one eye, one arm, one leg, half a stomach, half a face, etc. Seeing the fragmented bodies, the queens got frightened and asked the maidens to throw them away. They were thrown into the garbage. Later at night, a Rakshasa woman by name Jara chanced to see these pieces of flesh. She was elated and took them out. Out of curiosity, she united the two fragments, and lo, the two halves became a healthy child of one body. The Rakshasa woman was surprised to find that the baby had a very strong body. She felt it difficult to carry the heavy body of the baby. The child started crying, and the maternal tenderness of the queens made them rush towards the child. They were surprised to see the child and took it to the king. The king was overjoyed, as life had been given to the child by Jara. He named the baby Jarasandha. The boy grew up into a great hero, delighting the hearts of his parents. At the proper time, the king installed Jarasandha on the throne and left for the forest with his wives to lead the life of an ascetic. Jarasandha conquered many kingdoms and became a dreaded emperor. Kamsa was Jarasandha's son-in-law. Therefore, when I killed Kamsa, Jarasandha vowed to destroy the whole of my clan. 17 times he attacked Mathura. Finally, I thought it more discreet to retreat to a new but distant island city, Dwaraka. Yudhishthira, on learning about the might of Jarasandha, was not for fighting him. Arjuna and Bhima, however, were quite firm on going to fight with him. Krishna said, "To defeat him and his army together is impossible. But in a single combat, Bhima or Arjuna can vanquish him. So let us try." Yudhishthira reluctantly agreed. Krishna, Bhima and Arjuna, disguised as Snataka Brahmins, made their way to Magadha, the city of fabulous wealth. A Snataka Brahmin is one who has just finished his studies in Gurukula but is yet to be married. Usually, these Brahmins are looked upon with great respect. On reaching the gates of the city, they pierced the high Chaityaka hill, which was worshipped by Jarasandha and other citizens of Magadha. They broke the traditional drums, which miraculously produced sound lasting for one full month when beaten once. On entering the city, they marveled at the varieties of food and flowers. There, the shops were filled with all conceivable things, rare and costly. They seized whatever garlands they wanted. At that time, the learned Brahmins of Magadha saw many evil omens and reported them to their king Jarasandha. To ward off their influence, the king had propitiatory rites performed by the priests and himself took to fasts and penances. Krishna, accompanied by Bhima and Arjuna, reached the palace. Thinking them to be some great Snataka Brahmins, Jarasandha received them with great respect. Jarasandha said, "You are most welcome, holy men." Arjuna and Bhima remained silent, and Krishna explained, "My companions are observing a vow of fasting and silence today, so they will not speak till midnight." "Very well, take rest till then. I shall present myself again before you after midnight," remarked Jarasandha and left them. Jarasandha returned to the Snataka Brahmins at midnight. Their conduct made Jarasandha suspicious, and he also observed that they had on their hands the scars made by the bowstring and had besides the proud bearing of Kshatriyas. When Jarasandha demanded to know who they really were, Krishna disclosed their identity and threw a challenge to the enraged Jarasandha. Krishna said, "You can choose any one of us to fight with you." Jarasandha said, "Krishna, you are a cowherd and Arjuna is a mere boy. Bhima is famous for his physical strength, so I shall fight with him." Then those two best of men, powerful heroes, fiercely fought with their bare arms. Bhima and Jarasandha were such great wrestlers that they fought with each other continuously for 13 days without taking rest or refreshment. On the 14th day, Jarasandha showed signs of exhaustion and Krishna pressed Bhima to kill him. At once, Bhima lifted and whirled him round 100 times and pressed his knee against his backbone and tore his body asunder into 2 halves. Amazingly, the 2 halves of Jarasandha's body united. A moment later, the king got up as though nothing had happened, and Bhima was challenged again. Bhima was aghast. He looked at Krishna. Krishna picked up a straw, tore it into 2, and cast the bits in opposite directions. Bhima took the hint. He once again tore Jarasandha asunder and threw the 2 portions in opposite directions so that they could not come together again and be united. Thus, Jarasandha was killed by Bhima. Krishna left the dead body of the king at the palace gate. Then they freed all the captive kings. The kings thus freed were grateful to them. They promised to assist Yudhishthira in performing the great Rajasuya sacrifice. Rajasuya sacrifice. On their triumphant return, Yudhishthira received Krishna with great honor and embraced Bhima and Arjuna in great joy. Krishna took leave of the Pandavas and returned to Dwaraka. Arjuna expressed his desire to go on a war campaign. He said, "Brother, I possess many valuable weapons. We can make use of them to raise huge funds to meet the expenses of the costly yajna. Please permit me to go on a campaign of conquest." Yudhishthira agreed gladly, and Arjuna set out with a large army. Bhima, Nakula, and Sahadeva also set out on similar mission in different directions. Bhima conquered the east, Sahadeva the south, Nakula the west, and Arjuna the north. The enormous wealth received as tributes from many kings made the treasury of Yudhishthira overflow with riches. Yudhishthira now got ready to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice. Lord Krishna also arrived with his retinue carrying many valuable presents. Seeing Krishna, the Pandavas' joy knew no bounds. Krishna and Vyasa made all the arrangements for the Rajasuya sacrifice. Messengers were sent in different directions to invite all the kings. The guests began to arrive one by one. The city was filled with beautiful mansions which were specially built to accommodate many princes. It looked like a city of gods. Wealth was liberally flowing into the treasury. Krishna had allotted the work of looking after the treasury to Duryodhana. Duryodhana saw the bounteous homage paid to Yudhishthira. He was furious with envy, but he did not let anyone guess his feelings. Vyasa and Dhaumya officiated as priests in this yajna. Yudhishthira was installed as the master of the sacrifice. The rituals were all carried out in a grand manner. Yudhishthira showered everybody with presents of great value. Jewels were distributed liberally. The heavenly gods were satisfied by the libations poured into the holy fire by the officiating rishis. On the last day of the sacrifice, Yudhishthira was bathed with sacred waters collected from various holy rivers. The coronation was over. It was now the duty of the king to honor the guests. Bhishma stood up in the assembly and told Yudhishthira, "My son, these kings and rishis have come from different parts of the country to honor you and grace the yajna with their presence. It is now your duty to offer arghya or worship and honor them." Krishna kills Sishupala. Hearing these words of Bhishma, Yudhishthira requested Bhishma himself to suggest the person to whom the first arghya was to be offered. Bhishma unhesitatingly suggested the name of Lord Krishna. Yudhishthira was indeed very happy to honor Krishna, who was everything to him. Commanded by Bhishma, Sahadeva proceeded towards Krishna to offer him the first arghya. But some of the kings did not like the honor paid to Krishna. Sishupala, the king of the Chedis, could not brook what he considered an insult. He stood up and shouted, "Why to Krishna? How are these kings less worthy? You children do not understand dharma, for the ways of dharma are very subtle. Is Krishna the eldest among us? No. When his father Vasudeva is sitting here, how can Krishna accept the worship? If you think he is the best ally, then what about Drupada? If you consider him as guru, where does Drona stand? Are not Kripa, Duryodhana, Ashwatthama worthy of worship? Why, Krishna is after all a Yadava, a community that can never claim kingship because of a curse. If your intention was to offer the first worship to Krishna, why were these kings invited here? to be insulted? Shishupala then turned towards Krishna and asked, O Krishna, are you not ashamed to accept this worship which you are not worthy of? Then Shishupala went on insulting Krishna with many abuses. At last, he walked out of the hall in great anger. Yudhishthira ran after him and tried to appease him. He said, You have spoken most cruelly about Krishna. You have insulted even Bhishma. Look at the other elders who approve of the worship of Lord Krishna. Bhishma intervened and said, Why waste words with one who does not understand the greatness of Krishna? Krishna deserves worship not only by us, but by all the three worlds. He is among men like Gayatri among mantras. As for Shishupala, pay no heed to his mad ravings. Then Sahadeva got up and said, I have done the correct thing. For us, Krishna is everything. He is our friend, philosopher, and guide. If you dislike honoring Krishna, I am prepared to fight with you. Those men who will not worship Krishna should be considered as dead, though living. Ignoring Shishupala, Lord Krishna was worshipped. Shishupala shouted, What are we doing here? Let us fight them. Krishna now knew that Shishupala was up to mischief. Confused by the situation, Yudhishthira turned towards Bhishma. Dogs are barking at lions, remarked Bhishma. You go ahead, leaving them to bark. Now, Shishupala's anger turned against Bhishma. He started abusing him in violent language. Even as Shishupala spoke, Krishna intervened and said, 100 times I have so far forgiven him because I gave word to his mother that I would forgive 100 of his misdeeds. But no more. Now he dies. With these words, he flung his discus and cut off the head of Shishupala. A glow emanated from the body of Shishupala and entered that of Krishna. Shishupala was none other than one of Vishnu's attendants who had taken human birth under a curse. He was released by Lord Krishna. Yudhishthira commanded his brothers to perform the funeral ceremony of King Shishupala, befitting his royal status. Duryodhana's jealousy. The Rajasuya sacrifice was completed in a grand manner, and Krishna took leave of Yudhishthira. He advised him, Cherish your subjects with vigilance and patience. You become the refuge to all your friends and relatives, even as clouds are to all creatures, a large tree to birds and Indra to the devas. King Duryodhana stayed on at Indraprastha in the palace of the Pandavas along with Shakuni. He was amazed at the beauty and splendor of the creation of Maya. He came to a place made of crystal, mistook it for water and drew up his clothes. Finding out his mistake, he was ashamed of himself. Later, he mistook a lake of crystal water adorned with crystal water flowers for land and fell into it with all his clothes on. Bhima and others roared with laughter. He mistook the closed door for an open one and thereby hurt his head. In the same way, mistaking another open door for a closed one, he attempted to open it with outstretched hands and tumbled down. Peals of laughter greeted him from all sides. Bhima, Draupadi, and others were laughing at his plight. He walked out of the hall in great anger. And soon, he, along with his retinue, took leave of the Pandavas and returned to Hastinapura. Duryodhana was burning with anger and shame. He wanted to commit suicide, but Shakuni consoled him, saying that a way would soon be found to vanquish the Pandavas. He said, "They are great heroes. We can never vanquish them in war, but there is a way. Yudhishthira has a weakness for gambling, but he does not know how to play the game. As you know, I have mastered that art. There is none in this world who can defeat me in this game. You invite Yudhishthira for a game of dice. I will make him gamble away his entire kingdom. But you must get your father's permission for inviting him for a game of dice." Accompanied by Duryodhana, Shakuni approached Dhritarashtra and said, "O king, Duryodhana is depressed very much after returning from Indraprastha." Dhritarashtra was sad to hear it. He asked Duryodhana affectionately, "O son, what is the cause of your grief?" Duryodhana replied, "Yudhishthira's prosperity depresses me unendurably. He gave lavish gifts to thousands and his generosity has brought him great fame. Hundreds of kings visit him. During the Rajasuya sacrifice also, he distributed as presents heaps of gems and jewels. His enormous wealth and popularity have robbed my mind of all peace. Shakuni is good at dice. Give him permission to play against Yudhishthira and win through dice the wealth of the Pandavas." But Dhritarashtra said, "I do not know whether what you say is good or bad. Give me some time. I shall consult Vidura and let you know." Duryodhana said quickly, "Vidura will never agree. I know him. If you do not give permission, I will kill myself. After my death, you can enjoy the kingdom with Vidura." The suggestion of his son's death upset Dhritarashtra. He had no choice but to give his blessings to the evil plan. Vidura goes as an emissary. Dhritarashtra then ordered a new palace to be built for playing the game of dice. Vidura, having come to know of it, hurried to Dhritarashtra and pleaded, "O Lord, please do not permit this game of dice. This will undoubtedly bring about the ruin of your race by nourishing unbounded hate." But Dhritarashtra said, "If gods are propitious, nothing will happen. There is no harm in a friendly gambling match. Moreover, with such excellent people like you, Drona and Bhishma around me, no evil can befall us. I want you to go to Indraprastha and invite Yudhishthira on my behalf." With a heavy heart, Vidura left for Indraprastha. Yudhishthira was overjoyed to see Vidura. He welcomed him warmly. He inquired about the welfare of Dhritarashtra and others. Vidura answered suitably and said, "Duryodhana has built a new hall for games and Dhritarashtra wants you to go to Hastinapura with your brothers and Draupadi. You can also spend some time in gambling, which is so dear to you. Yudhishthira was intrigued by this message. It was seemingly harmless. He asked Vidura, "Oh uncle, gambling will end up in quarrel. A wise man will avoid it if he can. I seek your advice on this matter. What do you think? Is it proper for us to gamble?" Vidura replied, "Everyone is aware that gambling is the root of misery. I did my best to oppose the idea, but Dhritarashtra could not listen to me. He commanded me to invite you, and so I have come with the invitation. You may do as you please." Despite this warning, Yudhishthira went to Hastinapura with his brothers and retinue, as he did not want to disobey Dhritarashtra. Duryodhana digs his own grave. Arriving at Hastinapura, the Pandavas went to Dhritarashtra's palace. After paying due respects to the elders, they sat in their places. Shakuni spoke first. "O Yudhishthira, the assembly is full. Let the dice be cast. Let us begin the game." Yudhishthira said, "Gambling is a sin. There is no morality in it. Why are you so eager to defeat us by deceitful means?" Shakuni said, "Yudhishthira, when two people fight, the better man wins. In a game, the desire to defeat one's opponents is always devious. Victory is always the ultimate motive. But if you are afraid of playing with me, you may withdraw." Yudhishthira said, "O Shakuni, I will not withdraw when I am challenged. Destiny is all powerful. With whom am I to play?" Immediately, Duryodhana intervened and said, "O king, my uncle Shakuni will play on my behalf." Yudhishthira said, "Gambling by proxy is not in order. However, if you insist, I do not mind the breaking of the rule. Let the game begin." Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Drona, Kripa, and many other venerable elders sat sadly witnessing the play. Yudhishthira first announced pearls and gold necklaces as his stake. Skillfully, Shakuni threw the dice and won them. Next, Yudhishthira kept his treasury as a stake. Again, Shakuni won the game. Shakuni was using manipulated dice, and so he went on winning game after game, and as a result, the Pandava king lost all his riches, kingdom, his attendants, his brothers, one by one, and finally, even himself. Last of all, forced by Shakuni, he staked his wife Draupadi and lost her too. Duryodhana was beside himself with joy at the sight of the ruin of the Pandavas. He turned to Vidura and said, "Draupadi is now ours. Go and bring her here. She must henceforth sweep our house clean." Soon, great shouts of shame, shame, fie, fie arose from all sides. The more emotional ones wept. Some others perspired and felt that the end of the world had come. Vidura got up and said, "Duryodhana, are you mad that you rush to seek your own destruction? Why are you putting your hands in a cobra's hole?" But Duryodhana was not going to heed any advice. He turned to Duchasana and said, "You go and drag Draupadi here." Duchasana immediately went to Draupadi and said, "Listen, O Draupadi, I have been ordered by my king to take you to his court. so that you may act as our maidservant. Hearing these words, she felt as if the ground was slipping under her feet. Terribly shocked, she began to cry bitterly and ran towards the inner palace to get to Gandhari's chamber so that she might be safe there. But Dushasana did not allow her to go very far. He held her by her hair and dragged her to the court. Her hair got dishevelled. She cast a glance with agony and helplessness at the Pandava brothers, who were sitting with their heads hung down in shame. She said, "Shame on the descendants of the Emperor Bharata, who have ceased to be true Kshatriyas and have started losing their honor in gambling. I condemn the elders sitting here and watching me being disgraced before their very eyes. Who will answer my question? Had my husband any right to stake me?" There was profound silence in the hall, and all were sitting with their heads down. None dared to even utter a single word in reply to Draupadi's question. At last, Bhishma spoke, "Oh, blessed lady, dharma is a subtle thing and very difficult to understand. I am unable to decide properly the point you have raised. But Dushasana spoke disagreeable and harsh words to Draupadi, who was piteously weeping, looking pathetically at her helpless husbands. Bhima could hold himself no longer. He cast his eyes on Yudhishthira and burst out, "Oh brother, when you lost all the wealth, I was not sorry. When you lost us, even then my anger was not roused. But by staking Draupadi, you have committed an unpardonable sin." He looked at Sahadeva and said, "Oh Sahadeva, bring me the fire. First, I must burn the hands of Yudhishthira." Arjuna, however, consoled Bhima and said, "Bhima, this is not the time for anger. Yudhishthira is our eldest brother. It is our duty to obey him." These words of Arjuna made Bhima quiet. The grace of Shri Krishna. Karna found it a good occasion to degrade the Pandavas because they had always been the cause of his humiliation. He asked Dushasana to strip all the five brothers of their royal garments and to strip Draupadi as well. Hearing this, the Pandavas began to remove and throw their royal garments on the ground. Dushasana got up and, in the presence of all, began to pull off the sari of Draupadi. With tears in her eyes, Draupadi looked at everybody for help. But none came to her rescue. Draupadi prayed aloud to Lord Krishna to save her honor, saying,
"Oh Krishna, do you not see that I am persecuted by the Kurus? Save me, who has no other refuge except you. O Govinda, save me from this plight.
Crying thus, Draupadi covered her face and continued to pray to Sri Krishna. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna at once responded, and lo, a miracle happened. There seemed to be no end to the sari covering the body of Draupadi as the Shasana was trying to pull it off her body. As he went on pulling, more and more and more and more of it appeared around her person in different hues. The Shasana pulled heaps of them and got only more and more tired. Finally, he sat down totally exhausted. This miraculous incident stunned the whole assembly. That the Supreme Lord protects one who depends on him with single-minded devotion is amply demonstrated by this moving episode. Seeing the shameful act of the Shasana, Bhima, trembling in anger and clenching his fists, uttered a terrible oath in deafening voice.
O Kshatriyas, listen to my words, never before uttered by any man, words that will never be uttered in future. If I fail to keep my word, may I lose the heaven of my ancestors. In the battle that will surely be fought, I will rip open the chest of the Shasana with my bare hands and drink his blood.
Hearing these ominous words, the entire assembly trembled with fear. The sinful act of Duryodhana became the root cause for the destruction of the whole Kuru race in course of time. Duryodhana uncovered his right thigh in a most indecent manner in the very presence of Draupadi. Seeing this, Bhima, red with anger, burst out, "Let not Bhima go to the regions obtained by his ancestors. If he does not break that thigh in a great battle." Anger crackled from him like sparks from a blazing fire. Dhritarashtra was horrified to hear Bhima's vows. So he thought it wise to release the Pandavas out of Duryodhana's slavery, and he gave back to Yudhishthira everything he had lost in the game. Yudhishthira gambles again. Then Yudhishthira, accompanied by his brothers and Draupadi, started for Indraprastha. But Duryodhana, Karna and Shakuni conspired together and approached Dhritarashtra with sweet and cunning words. They said to him, "The Pandavas will destroy us if they go free. Already Arjuna and Bhima are casting hostile glances at us. Do you think they will forgive us? Allow us one more dice game. This time the loser in the game will have to live in the forest for 12 years and incognito in the year following. We will win and send them to the forest. In 13 years, we can get prepared to face them in the battle." Dhritarashtra sent a messenger again to bring back the Pandavas. Drona, Vidura and others protested, but Dhritarashtra remained adamant. The Pandavas once again came to Hastinapura for gambling. Shakuni explained the bet and added that if the losers were recognized in the 13th year, they should be in exile for another 12 years as penalty. The play started, and once again Shakuni won. The Pandavas began preparing at once for their long exile. The Shasana exclaimed, Now begins the unchallenged supremacy of Duryodhana. The Pandavas are finished. Bhima, hearing the words of Dushasana, rushed towards him and said, "As you pierce our hearts with your words, so will I pierce your heart in the battlefield." When the Pandavas were going out of the Sabha, Duryodhana mockingly mimicked the majestic walk of Bhima. Thereupon, Bhima, half turning towards him, said, "I shall kill Duryodhana with my mace." Felling him on the ground, "I shall place my foot on his neck. As regards Dushasana, I will drink his blood like a lion. Arjuna will kill Karna and Sahadeva will kill Shakuni. Even the Himalayas may be moved. The sun may lose its rays and the moon its coolness, but we shall not fail to fulfill our vows." Yudhishthira said, "I bid you all farewell, but I shall meet you again on my return." Draupadi went to Kunti and received her blessings. When the Pandavas, along with Draupadi, left, anxiety came over Dhritarashtra and he summoned Vidura and asked him to describe the way they left. Vidura replied, "Yudhishthira covered his face. Bhima flexed his arms. Sahadeva rubbed his face. Arjuna followed Yudhishthira, scattering sand along the path, and Nakula covered himself with dust. Draupadi followed the king by covering her face with her disheveled hair and weeping. The citizens followed them, crying aloud. At the departure of the Pandavas, lightning flashed in the cloudless sky and the earth began to tremble. O king, these extraordinary and fearful omens seen and heard indicate the destruction of the Bharata race as the consequence of your acting on evil counsel." When they were just talking, there came to the Sabha Narada, surrounded by great rishis. He then uttered these terrible words, "In the 14th year hence, for the fault of Duryodhana, the entire clan of Kurus will be destroyed by the strength of Bhima and Arjuna." Narada left with the celestial rishis. Then Drona warned Dhritarashtra the consequences of Duryodhana's evil acts. Dhritarashtra, greatly worried, felt sad for his actions. The inexhaustible vessel. The Pandavas, accompanied by Draupadi, left for the forest. The citizens followed them. Censuring openly Bhishma, Drona, Vidura, etc. Yudhishthira was moved by their affection. He persuaded them to return. Weeping aloud, they retraced their steps and the Pandavas drove their chariots to the banks of the river Ganga. Purifying themselves in the waters of the river, they spent the night under the shelter of the trees. Several Brahmins who had accompanied them insisted on continuing to travel with them. Yudhishthira addressed them thus, "Please return to Indraprastha. I shall not be able to entertain you as I would like to. Moreover, life in the forest is not easy. Pray, go back and leave us to our fate." But the learned Brahmins persisted in their resolve. They were prepared to share all their troubles with the Pandavas. Yudhishthira was very sad because he had not the means to feed them. He discussed the problem with his brothers and his guru, Dhaumya. Dhaumya suggested that he should worship the sun god for help. He said, "The sun is the lord of all food and all the riches of the earth. If you pray to him sincerely, he will come to your rescue." Accordingly, Yudhishthira started reciting hymns on the sun god with the utmost devotion. The sun god was pleased with his prayers and appeared before him in person and said, "I am pleased with you. You shall get all that you desire. I shall provide you food for 12 years. Accept this copper vessel. Every day it will be full. So long as Draupadi holds this vessel without partaking of its contents, the vessel will produce inexhaustible food. Once she has eaten from the vessel, it will become empty for the day. But next morning, it will again be full. It is an Akshaya Patra, an inexhaustible vessel." Having said this, the sun god handed over the copper vessel to Yudhishthira and disappeared. Yudhishthira handed over the vessel to Draupadi. Draupadi would cook a little food and put it in the vessel. At once, the vessel would be full of delicious preparations. Yudhishthira then fed the Brahmins. After he had eaten along with his brothers, Draupadi had her meal. After she had eaten, the vessel became empty for the day. Then Yudhishthira, accompanied by Dhaumya and other Brahmins, set out for the Kamyaka forest. Vidura visits the Pandavas. After the Pandavas had gone to the forest, Dhritarashtra summoned Vidura and asked, "What do we do now?" Vidura, who was very wise, said, "I can suggest only one thing, but I am not sure my suggestion will be liked by you. Bring back the Pandavas and return their kingdom to them. If you do not do so, then be prepared to see the destruction of all your sons. This is my advice. Do as you please." Dhritarashtra was upset by the words of Vidura. He said angrily, "You always speak in the interest of the Pandavas and never in ours. How can I abandon my sons for the sake of the Pandavas? Instead of consoling me, you are hurting me and asking me to do the impossible. I do not want you here. Go away from here." With these harsh words, the king left the chambers, leaving Vidura alone. Vidura immediately set out for the forest to meet the Pandavas. The Pandavas had by then left the banks of the Ganga and reached the Kamyaka forest. Vidura met them there. Yudhishthira was excited at the sight of Vidura. Vidura was moved to intense grief at the sight of the Pandavas in the forest. He told them about the difference of opinion between him and the king. After the departure of Vidura, Dhritarashtra repented and fell down unconscious. When he regained his senses, he called Sanjaya and said, "Go and bring back Vidura. He is like the god of justice himself." Saying this, the king wept bitterly. Sanjaya reached the forest and told Vidura about the condition of the king. Vidura loved his brother very dearly. So after blessing the Pandavas, he took leave of them and returned to his brother at Hastinapura. The curse of Maitreya. Duryodhana was not happy at the return of Vidura. He summoned Dushasana, Karna and Shakuni and said, "Vidura went to the Pandavas and has returned. I do not know the reason for it. Perhaps Vidura has now convinced my father that the Pandavas should be brought back and the kingdom returned to them. If for any reason the Pandavas return, I will commit suicide rather than see them again prosperous." Karna said, "If they return, we shall have to defeat them again at dice. Or let us now go, overtake them, kill them, and put an end to this problem." This suggestion was applauded by all. They decided to march to the Pandavas in the forest. Vyasa arrived just in time to stop them. He went to Dhritarashtra and said, "You have already caused enough damage to yourself and to your sons by sending the Pandavas to the forest. The banished princes will nurse their anger for 13 years, and then when they come back from their exile, the entire world will be destroyed. You are the cause of all this injustice. Keep your son under your control, otherwise he will be destroyed much sooner." The great sage Maitreya came to the court of the Kurus after the departure of Vyasa. Hearing that he had come from the forest, Dhritarashtra spoke to him and inquired about the Pandavas. Maitreya said, "Yes, I met them. In fact, that is the reason for my coming here. You have not acted wisely in banishing the Pandavas." He turned towards Duryodhana and said, "I advise you for your own good. The Pandavas are the most powerful warriors. They have already killed the Rakshasas like Hidimba, Baka, and Kirmira." Duryodhana paid no attention to Maitreya's words. He began to slap his thigh and scratched the ground with his toe. Maitreya was wild at his insolent behavior. He cursed him and said, "Bhima will smash your thigh into pulp with his mace in the war. You will lose your life when the thigh is broken." Dhritarashtra tried to pacify the sage. Maitreya said, "If Duryodhana makes peace with the Pandavas, my curse will not have any effect. Else, my curse will work." Dhritarashtra was desirous of hearing the story of Kirmira mentioned by Maitreya. He asked Vidura to narrate it. Vidura said, "It is a story of superhuman achievement by Bhima. While the Pandavas were proceeding towards Kamyaka, they were accosted in the middle of the night by a powerful Rakshasa. He looked fearful. Yudhishthira asked him who he was. The Rakshasa said, 'I am Kirmira, the brother of Baka. I live here killing the animals and human beings who foolishly enter this forest. Who are you?' Yudhishthira introduced himself and his brothers. As soon as he heard the name of Bhima, Kirmira jumped up and said, 'I am waiting to avenge the death of Hidimba and Baka. Hidimba was my friend and Baka my brother. I shall take revenge by killing Bhima today.' Bhima, in his usual style, uprooted a big tree, used it as his club, and invited the Rakshasa for a fight. A fierce struggle took place between them. In the end, Bhima put Kirmira across his knees and killed him by breaking his neck. Thus, Kirmira was slain." Hearing this, Dhritarashtra became moody and was filled with fear.